The Process, a podcast about creativity and experimental music. In the world of experimental music, outcomes and accolades for creators can be uncertain and at times seem far and few between. Therefore, creators and practitioners of experimental music must embrace the one thing they will always have complete control over, the process. This podcast aims to understand this creative process by listening to new works and discussing them with their creators. Each episode focuses on one creator and their music. Understanding how and why they create can inform aspiring creatives and help audiences better understand and navigate experimental music. I'm Dr. Doug Bielmeyer, and I'll be your host as we explore the world of experimental music, creativity, and the human need to find purpose in their world and lives. This is The Process.
I'm Ford Ferquin. I'm the clarinetist in Unheard of Ensemble.
And I'm Daniel Anastasio. I'm the pianist in Unheard of. So our ensemble was founded in 2014, and we're an unusual group. It wasn't the four of us that founded it together. It was just me and Ford. We met at Stony Brook University. We were two grad students. Ford had big ideas. I just wanted to play a lot. Yeah. And he came to me and he said, hey man, you know, I have some friends in the department who are some really good composers, really talented composers. Do you want to put together a project, play some of their works? And I did. And I kind of fell in love with working with Ford, with kind of pursuing the sorts of projects he was interested in. And before you knew it, we had a ton of projects lined up. We were performing all around New York State. And we really established ourselves as an ensemble. We added a cellist, we added a clarinetist, we formed what we are now, which is a Messiaen quartet arrangement. And we kind of grew just by doing. You know, we didn't have a mission, we didn't have any thoughts, we just acted. And it's grown into this ensemble of friendship and openness and really grassroots projects. Now what we do is we work with composers all across the US. We perform a lot in New York, but also in a variety of states. We tour colleges and universities, we do workshops, we record student works. We like to have our finger on the pulse of what's going on in new music. And we play a lot of music that involves multimedia and electronics. Which is kind of at the front end of what's going on right now. But we're super open and adaptable. And that's kind of our main mission, is to stay that way as an ensemble. We've been lucky enough to win a ton of grants. And we've just been going and going and going for, God, almost a decade now, right, Ford?
Yeah. Next year is going to be our 10th anniversary. Wow. A lot of what we have started to do recently is not just go on tour and not just work with composers, but also figure out ways to really engage new audiences and find ways to make Unheard of more a part of what makes Brooklyn so special. We started this series called the Cultural Ecology Series on the Gowanus Canal. If you don't know what the Gowanus Canal is, it is one of the most polluted waterways in the U.S. and used to be one of New York's lifelines of industrial shipping back in the 1800s. But after the EPA designated it a Superfund site, there are all of these groups who are advocating for the local community and advocating for it to be cleaned up. I went on a canoe as we started working on this Chris Stark project called Fire Ecologies just to get some footage. And I sort of fell in love with it and became a member of the Gowanus Dredgers Canoe Club. Yeah. And we teamed up with my friend Celeste, who is one of the core members of the Dredgers. And we started doing these shows on the water, and it's become this regular thing for us. It's great to be able to highlight what the Dredgers are doing, advocating for water stewardship in the community. And for us, it's a way to tell New Yorkers stories, and it gets subjects and issues that matter to New Yorkers out there and also bring people closer to their waterway. Mm-hmm. If you go out there and you get to experience it and get to see what's out there, you get to see the nature out there, it makes you want to fight for and be a part of this community. And I think that what we're doing out there and what the Dredgers are doing mainly is really special.
I just want to add to that, that it feels so, you know, this doesn't happen very often in with series or with music concerts where it's like, this series feels so organic. You know, there are relationships with the Dredgers have grown, and it's become something that's real. And they've taught us about the environment that's going on there and what we can do. And we've helped them by putting on these shows. And it's not just like a venue, you know, it's become a relationship with these people and something we can really grow. So those are the kinds of community building, I don't know, shows that make us really proud.
Yeah. It's also just really fun. I'm actually a steward member this year, and I've started like volunteering for other events that are not music related. Just it's mm-hmm. really fun to take people who've never been out on the water and show them a little bit about the ecology and about the history, and mm-hmm. getting to learn a lot from them. I mean, I didn't know how to tie a single knot before. I didn't know what a cleat was. I didn't know that you were tying a knot in a very specific way on the cleat to be able to tie off the canoes. But it's funny how you can learn this kind of stuff. And it's really interesting because I wasn't really a member of the Dredgers before we got your corporate responsibility pledge piece. But when we played it again on the canal in August, it made me think back to the first time we played it on the canal, just how fitting it is. There's this one image in Allison's video that's of just like dumping grounds and like going to the, like taking the 1950s like family car to the beach where it's like toxic and infested with tons of muck. It's like, wow, we are now about 50 years removed from that imagery, and people are still reacting to it and making art. The piece is not about the Gowanus Canal, but just playing it on it just evokes such a interesting reaction from the audience. And I think that both hearing it and seeing the video art to it brings that character out.
Well, I think in a way it is about places like the canal, you know, that have been affected by industry, have been affected by businesses, have been affected by progress. And so I think that the piece in a way is about, you know, how these businesses and how industries affect our environment and just, you know, affect our lives. And, you know, the thing that I really love about the ecology series is that I think, you know, so how many years have you been doing it now? You've been doing it for, is it 3 or 4 years now?
This is our first year as a series. We did a couple of testing shows. We finally have the dock infrastructure. The Dredgers literally built the docks out.
When you were thinking about putting on a new music event, did you think you'd have to know dock structures? Was that something that you thought you would have to have skills in? Or
Well, we just lucked out. They built it and they were going to have this regardless of us.
Yeah. Well, that even brings me to how this whole concert series has inspired you even as a composer, Ford. Is that correct?
Yeah. I wrote a piece for the last concert, the concert that Corporate Responsibility pledges on, and it explored the Atlantic ribbed mussel, this really resilient creature. There are all of these ideas that I've been taking from my trips on the canal. I do a lot of work with video, and so it was really inspiring to take video from the canal and be able to base music on that. Mm-hmm. It's interesting, though, because I feel like the process for Corporate Responsibility Pledge was probably the opposite. Like, what was the initial inspiration for this?
Well, I think we had all met at the wonderful series or the wonderful composition lab that you all have. It's been an annual thing for a few years now. It's the Composers Collaborative Initiative. Am I saying it correctly? Yeah, the CCI.
That's the joke. No one knows the actual acronym.
The
CCI okay. Sessions. Collaborative CCI Composition Session. Initiative. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I met you all through that. And we worked on a piece, met some really great people. Aaron Rodgers, of course, was the sort of guest, one of the featured composers. And so working with you on that, and I got to watch you as an ensemble perform a lot of different types of pieces. And the first thing, you know, I noticed is obviously, you know, you all had just fantastic chops and were playing like really difficult music and very sort of new music. But then you were also playing, you know, Messiaen, and you were playing, you were playing some of the, I guess it's not standard rep, but you were playing some of this really beautiful music, in a very authentic way as well. And then I also saw that you guys were down for electronics and computers and things like that. And I'm just like, wow, this would be such a great group to write another piece for. And I saw you had a call for MediaWorks. I think this was like a year or so later. And I believe it was also like during pandemic or something around that time. So I was just like, or maybe it was right before. And I was just like, wow, this would be a really great opportunity to write a piece, to really just like dive into creating music during this horrible time when there's like nothing else to do. And I thought that would just be great. And the fact that it was going to be for multimedia, I was really excited about that because I had a longtime friend and collaborator, Allison Tannenhaus, who does this crazy kind of glitch art. And she just had a show last week here in Boston. It's going on all this month. And I was just like, this would be so cool to like work with her and then also work with this really great ensemble that I feel like you guys are kind of fearless in a way where you're just like, we'll try it, you know, we'll do this and that. So
I would say more foolhardy, maybe.
Foolhardy, hey, you know, one person's foolhardy is another one's brave. But I think open too. I think sometimes there's ensembles that have like very clear agendas about what they'll do and what they won't do. And I think you all tend to, at least in my perception, have a real sort of experimental.
We certainly have not learned our lesson. That's for sure. Our lesson.
Great. Well, let's hope you never do. But so that was really the inspiration. I mean, honestly, the fact that I was going to be writing for musicians who would be receptive to something different, maybe something still that was kind of straightforward. I didn't feel like there was any requirements about what I had to write. Did it have to be like really atonal and, you know, crazy? Could it be more straightforward? Could it be true to what I wanted to do? I thought, you know, it would check all those boxes. So just the ensemble alone was inspiration.
Well, what I personally really love about the piece is the way it handles improvisation, you know, because and in your previous work for our CCI, that also had an element of you know, aleatoric section or an improvisational section. And the way it starts so clearly, it starts so precisely, it starts kind of minimally and with a lot of focus, and then it melts into something that is sonically more vague. And you know, was that something that you had decided on right from the outset, or after some visuals, or you know, I'm curious about that sort of morphing in the piece.
Absolutely, and I think that's a lesson I learned from CCI. The first piece we worked on together, I think at the time was called Imperfect Music, and then it ended up being called Orphans in the Heartland, and that's on the first CCI Sessions album, right? So that piece was all aleatoric. It was all basically open. There were gestures and there were cells, and you all could kind of progress through them in, you know, sort of a less organized fashion. And I really love that piece, and I love the way you interpreted it and performed it. But I got the idea from that piece to kind of be like, well, what if it was like really structured and then not structured at all? Like, what would, you know, what would that comparison be like? How would that affect a performance? So the idea that it's like these two really organized sections, kind of like you said, like kind of minimalistic, but very sort of like rhythm oriented, and everyone, there are a lot of unisons, and very, very organized and very sort of dumb in a way, like where I kept telling myself, like, take some of the extra harmony and melody out and really just like lean into the unisons, and even, you know, rhythmic unison as well as pitch unisons, and have it be really, really straightforward. And then, like you said, that have that center section sort of open up where then you could interpret, you know, some of these more sort of open phrases, and you could decide when to come in and when not to.
When you described going from Orphans to Corporate Responsibility Pledge, I noticed a sort of similar trend that we've been seeing from a lot of composers, although in this case, you tackled it a little differently. A lot of composers will write a piece, hear the first performance, and go, okay, well, I know what I want to do now. And I'm at the point now that I've heard it, and now that I've had time to sit with it, that I can start going from there and like tinkering, figuring out how to change it. And we found pieces that we played morph between first and third performance, like third and fifth, and so on and so forth. There's always something that gets retooled, refined. It's interesting though that you went from the first piece and then just sort of did you took a lot of these concepts, but did a 180 in terms of sort of your process in that. I don't know, at least to me, it seems like you've really changed up what you were doing from that, which was very unstructured, to something that's like structure, less structured, too structured, but has this through line.
Yeah, I think it was, you know, like for me with any compositional piece, it's about usually like an idea or a thread. There's other songs on the album where, you know, there's a very specific thing I was trying to do, whether it's like this like big low end thing or this drop thing. So there's always seems to be like sort of a guiding idea that I want to try. You know, even in Burning Old Man Summer, which Hypercube performs, it's the track that appears right after Corporate Responsibility Pledge. In that piece, it's very written out and very organized. However, it's anchored by two sort of free sections. So it starts open with this kind of open free section, very straightforward, and then we kind of have a reprise of it. So it's really kind of just working the same idea of like control and, you know, sort of letting it go and, you know, letting the musicians be musicians and letting you have some, you know, sort of sovereignty or control over what's going to happen at certain parts. But the balance of it not just being like, hey, here's a picture of a square, like improvise on that for 30 minutes. And not that I'm like, you know, saying anything negative about, you know, spatial notation or graphic scores or anything like that. I'm just saying it's like, where's the balance of like allowing you to be musicians and perform and interpret and then really just being like, you know, like I think about a Berio score as like, do it this way, like do it. You know, more like a Terry Riley score is more of, you know, here's some specific notes and harmonies, but you can kind of decide when you're going to play different cells and how many people are going to be involved and what you want the timbre to be.
Yeah, that kind of openness is really beautiful and inviting for the performer. And I think, you know, we were talking about process. Like, I think sometimes we wish that that some younger composers had the courage to actually like react honestly to a performance of their own work. Sometimes, you know, we're so in our heads about, well, I need this to go well, or I need to prove myself, or I need validation from this performance. That like it is scary to listen to a premiere and then be like, I want to change that. I want to change that. That's bad. That's good. You know, to react with sort of like radical honesty to your own work and not being afraid of it. We're an ensemble that really invites that. Yeah. So, you know, we're down to get even half a score and be like, well, what do you guys think so far? Or like, how can we work? How can the composer maybe work with you to accentuate what you guys do? That sort of like real collaboration, I think, still doesn't happen often enough. Not that it necessarily has to all the time. There's some composers, and I'm a type of artist myself who like, I lock myself away and I'm a perfectionist and it's only going to come out when it's like ready to go.
Yeah.
And more likely than not, people aren't going to understand what I'm doing until after I present it. And then, you know, a couple times even. And then, so I really get across that strong idea I've been stewing on or, you know, for a long time.
Yeah.
But more often than not, we find nowadays, composers, it's almost like they're asking for a hand to reach out and say, hey man, you know, it's okay. Like let's figure this out together if we want. Like, you know, sometimes there's so much separation between composer and performer that it feels like an impossible gap or an impossible divide. And we just want to be that ensemble that's like, we're not taking ourselves too seriously. We want to take your work seriously and whatever is going to help to get your voice out, including a conversation, that's what we want.
Not to get too far ahead and spoil five episodes from now, but what's the relationship between the original piece and the remix? Like, what made you decide to remix the piece and like It's very electronic compared to this one, I noticed,
yeah,
at least.
Yeah, and you know, I was just talking to Eric Salzar. He's going to be the guest host for CRP, or Corporate Responsibility Pledge, East Coast Remix. We were talking about that, like finding that sort of middle ground. And that's just the way I approached it, was what if we took this thing that had, you know, that sort of motion, that sort of energy that sort of the original Corporate Responsibility Pledge has, and what if I put that in more of a, you know, dance sort of EDM genre. And you know, I struggled a lot with being like, this sounds like this, or this no longer sounds like concert music, or it no longer sounds like my voice. And but I think it was really exciting to kind of mix genres. And I think it just goes to the larger point of the album. I mean, we live in a society where there's reboots, cover songs, reimaginings. You know, every show, every media is prefaced with, from the people who brought you this cool thing, they're doing this new cool thing. And so I just felt like really snarky, and was just kind of like, well, what if I took these things and sort of repurposed them in a more, I don't know if I want to say conventional format, but just a format that would be maybe a little unusual to some of the other kind of, you know, sound collage, sort of minimalist pieces, or even drone pieces that are also on the album.
Well, something as simple as timbre and just sound and production have such a profound effect, especially on a general audience, how they perceive the music. I mean, right. So most obvious example is things like, okay, taking like a Beyonce song and putting it to a quartet, all of a sudden it's like classy, you know.
Yes.
it's like that happens a lot, where it's like changing genres but keeping the music can just like profoundly, and as musicians who are classically trained the way we were on traditional instruments like the violin, the clarinet, the piano, and the cello, we're so in it all the time. We're playing every day. We're so used to the timbre of our own instruments, that we don't realize like how old they sound, or how automatically it can feel like, all right, I'm in a traditional concert hall. And maybe that's partly why we've like slowly been more and more attracted to amplified sound, to electronic sounds, to other media and other genres, when we've been playing a lot of multimedia works and a lot of electronic, electroacoustic works. And then we go to a purely acoustic show when we're not amplified, it's like four instruments. It can be like jarring. It's almost like, whoa, okay, we need to like adjust our ears a little bit. Purely because it's just a change of timbre.
I think I relate it to like a term called sonics. And I think about how when we talk about acoustic instruments in their purest form, they have a certain level of sonics, especially when we're like listening back to them over speakers. And, you know, the classic example is I was going skiing and I was driving in my car and I was listening to a minimalist piece. I think it was like John Adams or something. And I was listening to it in the car, just like playing it very loud, enjoying it. And I got out of my car and like three or four cars away in the parking lot, there was somebody playing something that was just had so much low end. And it was a woman singing, and it was just overtaking the entire parking lot. And I was just like, man, the sonics of that thing, you know, of what was going on. I mean, that in itself was really breathtaking. And so for me, this idea of like, you can use electronics and you can use the studio to take something that is a great performance, you know, in just the, you know, corporeal world, and then translate that into something that's like really devastating sonically, you know, that can just really translate over a system or a subwoofer or something like that. And so then something like even just a string quartet can become this, you know, formidable thing. Not that a string quartet isn't, or a Messiaen ensemble isn't formidable, but you can enhance, you can change, alter.
Well, and that leads to there's no way that composers like Beethoven or Bach wouldn't be amplifying the crap out of it, because they would want to use the timbral possibilities and the sonic possibilities that they have through technology. They were always experimenting with technology, just the technology they had, which is updating their instruments, and they embrace them at every turn.
Absolutely. This has been awesome, guys. Thanks so much for coming on here and talking about Corporate Responsibility Pledge. Tell us a little bit more about what we can take in, what we can learn about Unheard of Ensemble. Tell us a little bit more about the series that is still continuing and people can check out.
Thanks again for having us, Doug. It's been a pleasure being on. If you want to check out more about Unheard of Ensemble, you can go to unheard-of-ensemble.com. unheard-of-ensemble.com. It's a mouthful and everyone forgets the dash, so there you go. Don't forget the dash. Aside from that, we're going to be going around the country some more in the fall. We're going to be in Ohio in November, which will be really exciting, and going to be going to Pittsburgh, University of Wyoming, going to be making a trip to California in the spring. And for those New Yorkers, anyone in Brooklyn, we're going to have our last cultural ecology show on October 15th at 7 p.m. It's going to be Christopher Stark's Fire Ecologies, contrasted by an opening set by Brooklyn-based Phong Tran, who just released an album a little while back called Computer Room and is going to be doing a bunch of really interesting electronic works, probably for synth, and it should be a really interesting pairing. Aside from that, we always have our collaborative composition initiative during the summer, which is open to composers of all ages. So if anyone's interested in checking out more of that, just go to our website and feel free to reach out to us.
Thanks to Ford and Daniel of the Unheard of Ensemble for sharing their time and talking a little bit about their role in Corporate Responsibility Pledge, part of the Music for Billionaires album, available everywhere October 27th. If you enjoyed this episode, stay tuned. There's more about the album and more guest hosts to come. As always, please like, subscribe, or leave a comment on your preferred podcasting app. I'm Dr. Doug Bielmeyer, and this has been The Process.